Thank you. Thank you, Maurice. Thank you, for Stephanie, for having me. It's a pleasure. The neighborhood is very familiar to me because my nephews just live a few blocks from here, and they go to Kentwood Elementary just across the street right here. So I've been in Westchester many times recently. So my company is Sitker. I started in 1977 when I was a research biologist, and I took a liking to programming the computers that were becoming on the scene. And the company that I was working for as a research biologist said, form your own company and do consulting and programming for the other departments. And so I did that, and that was 39 years ago, and the rest is kind of history, as I'll elaborate as we go through the presentation. But tonight I'm going to talk about how businesses function in the 21st century. And I'm happy that there are some teachers, professors here, because the last portion of my talk is what are the opportunities for those wanting to get into IT, so maybe geared more for the students who are interested in, you know, there's so many different things you can do programming. What are some good avenues to cut to the chase to get a good job and ultimately a lifelong career? My last name is Curtis, and someone here to mix up Curtis to make Sitker. And that was 1977, and it stuck. And it stuck. It stuck. So you're familiar with all of these companies. And it just so happens that of all of these, I have either worked for them or consulted for companies that are suppliers or in some cases customers of them. My current customers include Square, the credit card readers at the farmers market, and I've done work for Amgen, several projects. And the others, my customers are all small and mid-sized companies, and they are largely suppliers to Walmart and Amazon and Macy's and so on and so forth. So what do all of these companies have in common, and many others? The big common denominator is that they all use a technology called EDI, Electronic Data Interchange, which is referred to in today's world as B2B, business-to-business commerce. They need to use this technology, as you'll see, to be efficient, to be able to process your orders, for Amazon to get you your shipment basically overnight or even in some cases same day, and so forth. And retailers such as Amazon, in addition to doing B2B, also do B2C, business to consumer. That's how Amazon, the Amazon model is, where you go on their website, you order something, and then through the back end of their operation, I'm sorry?
How does FedEx get on your list?
FedEx is on my list because FedEx, when you're a small supplier and you're supplying Amazon or you're supplying Walmart, very often your shipments will go by FedEx. So as you'll see when we get into it, purchase orders come from Walmart and Amazon to a supplier. Supplier produces the product, ships the product by FedEx. FedEx receives the electronic documents, and then they arrive at the receiving dock of the warehouse of Walmart. And you know, funny you should bring up FedEx. It was not just last night that my wife and I were watching the news, and there was a FedEx commercial of a group of five people or so around a conference room table kind of brainstorming, and at the end of the commercial, it says, you know, FedEx, we're with you with e-commerce. So FedEx is getting into this in a big way. IBM is into it in a big way. Microsoft is into it in a big way. Walmart sort of really kicked this off big time in the 1980s. As you'll see, this EDI, or B2B technology, was developed in the for the Berlin airlift, actually, of how to handle the logistics. And Walmart and the auto industry picked up on that technology and ran with it. Basically, you cannot do business with Walmart if you do not do business electronically. And so they're the big players in the industry. So in the old days, if you will, when a company issued a purchase order to buy products from a supplier, they would have a purchasing agent that would print out create and print out the purchase order. It would be mailed, or later on it would be faxed. Maybe sometimes it's a telephone call to the supplier, where someone keys that order into their computer system to get that order in. And if they do it by mail, it's a 4 or 5 day process, and it costs umpteen dollars for a purchasing agent to cut the PO, and takes a lot of time, and there's a lot of errors and so forth. So today with EDI, the technology is that the purchasing system of a large customer like Walmart speaks directly to the order entry system of a supplier, be they a large supplier or be they a four-person company, such as my customers in Hawaii, who make travel accoutrements that they sell to Walmart for the 7 stores on the Hawaiian Islands. And so Walmart's purchasing system speaks directly to the customers. So with the B2B technology, you have relationships between a business and their suppliers, a business and their customers. You also have electronic relationships between a business and their freight companies. That's where UPS and FedEx come in, and all the logistics companies. And you have relationships between a business and their bank. The payments, the electronic remittances, come in electronically, and of course get deposited into your bank account. So it's all the systems are connected electronically. The EDI that I work with, the communications go in 2 different methods. Either they are today encrypted for security through the internet, and I on a daily basis work with secure software and security certificates to ensure that these business documents are secure, and also through what are known as value-added networks, VANs, which are private, like they originated as private telephone companies, just like you have AT&T and Verizon, to talk to your friends and relatives. There are value-added networks that securely carry these business documents electronically, in some cases through the internet, in some cases through secure networks. So in this slide, we have Walmart here. Walmart is using a very large accounting package called SAP, a German company, actually worldwide, that's used by many very large companies. And that the SAP system of Walmart, which compiles the purchase orders, receives the invoices, receives the shipping documents, communicates through EDI, even with a very small one or two or three or four person company that's running on QuickBooks, and they're both talking to UPS and FedEx and all the trucking companies that are carrying the product. So it's all interconnected, and you have these systems. So the way it works is if you go to a Walmart store and you take the last bottle of whisk off the shelf, their inventory system at the register is monitoring that and saying, it says that we're running out of whisk. It sends a directive to the Walmart headquarters in Arkansas that creates a purchase order for whisk that then goes out through EDI, in that particular case, to, I believe, Procter & Gamble, who makes whisk, that ships the product and keeps everything flowing. So the key or the beauty of EDI is that it's a universal business language. It's actually like a Bible of business documents, invoices, purchase orders, shipment documents. Your healthcare claims are an EDI document. Different, you know, medical approvals for prescriptions and medicines are all EDI documents. So there is a very large Bible or dictionary of business documents so that the computer systems can talk to the computer systems. Yes. Yes, EDI is the backbone that supports just in time. One of my customers is a tire manufacturer. I'm working on a project for them right now. And in their case, they get orders. Once a week, they get an order for product that has to be delivered to the factory at 10 a.m. sharp, or the beginning of the first shift sharp on, you know, October 31st, November 15th, and that they flow the products into the warehouse, into the assembly line and the manufacturing plant. They flow it in a choreographed manner that supports just in time so that on the production floor, there's not too much product, but there's not too little product, just enough to keep everything going. Well, it is, yes, because, for instance, if you order something very common from Amazon, they have it in their warehouse and they ship it out right away. But if you're ordering maybe something that's not so common, or it's out of stock, the Amazon system knows. Let's say you're ordering a battery for your car. Amazon knows that particular battery that you need is ordered. They have an order to receive them from the factory, but they don't have them in-house. But their ordering system knows on what day those batteries will arrive from from Eveready or Delco or whoever is making the battery. Well, if a product is taking 4 weeks, it's because whoever you're ordering it from doesn't have it in stock, and maybe the manufacturing plant is putting out as many batteries as they possibly can. They can only produce 1,000 batteries a day, and maybe they are over-ordered for batteries, so before they can send Amazon a battery, they've got a week's worth of production that's committed to Sears before they can produce the batteries that go to Amazon, and a product like a battery goes by truck and not by air, And so it all adds up. And that's what takes the time. And that happens. You can order products on Amazon that are literally shipped from China. Yeah, yeah. Well, if it's coming by ocean, the ocean voyage from China to the United States is 3 weeks plus times clearing customs. So that can be 4 weeks. That's very true. Exactly. Right. I mean, companies like Walmart and Amazon have very sophisticated systems that predict. I mean, Halloween is coming up, so Halloween products need to be in stock. After that, right after that is Thanksgiving, and then we're the Christmas. The flow of products into the United States for the Christmas holidays start in June and July, sometimes August. And because I happen to be in this business and I see the traffic of what's going through, I see this every year. Every June, July, certainly by August already, the Christmas orders are in, product is starting to hit the receiving docks and so forth, so that on Black Friday and so forth, it's there. So the beauty of EDI or how it works is your different business documents each have a number. The 200 series are dealing with motor freight. The 300 series are your ocean documents, your containers coming in from China and so forth. I'll point out that right here, the L.A. Long Beach port is the third largest port in the world behind Hong Kong and Singapore.
And they're enlarging it,
yes. So there's a lot of right here in the L.A. area, especially down in Torrance, Gardena, and so forth, is the real hub of a lot of commerce. And the documents that I mostly deal with, at least on a daily basis, are the 800 and 900 series, which are your commercial invoice. The 850 is the purchase order. The 856 is the advance ship notice. That's the shipping documents of what's being shipped. Well, we'll drill into the data documents in a slide or two. If you pull up an EDI, I'll show you an EDI document from Walmart, and it has the Walmart logo. The logo image is just a data piece in it. So it goes through. I'm sorry?
Without a different number.
If it's a commercial purchase order in the United States, it's an 850. If it's a grocery purchase order, it's an 880. If it's an invoice, it's an 810, and so forth. The documents are all standardized so that the SAP system at Walmart can speak that language, and the QuickBooks system that some of you may have and small businesses have can speak that language. So the QuickBooks can talk to SAP and all the other systems that we'll see in a little bit. So this is an EDI document. It's very compact. As I said, this was developed originally for the Berlin airlift at a time when most of you remember modems. And back in those days, I remember when, you know, a slow modem was 300 baud and 1200 baud was lightning fast. Perhaps in the Berlin airlift days, 30 baud was the standard, the leading edge at that time. And these documents have, an electronic envelope, which is how it's routed, just like a telephone number.
telephone number gets a telephone call to your phone. The electronic envelope routes it through the internet or through the value-added network to Walmart or whoever. So this is the EDI code. Excuse me. And in a human readable format, this is a Walmart purchase order, and you can see their logo is on the top. And this has all of their information. This slide is a little hard to see, but it defines the envelopes, and the segments are data records and the elements. In here, you can see that each element is a field, a data field, and is very encoded. For instance, if we're talking about an address or a name segment or record, the qualifiers, the two-digit code that says what this address is a two-character code. ST stands for ship to, BT stands for bill to, and so on and so forth. So it's very compact, and as I say, it was developed for the Berlin airlift when modems were really, really slow to get a lot of data through a very slow pipeline. You can see the code better here. This is the N1 is the name segment where the address is passed. You can see the ST, the ship to. That's who it's being shipped to, the address, city, state, and zip. Down here in the IT1 section, that's the line item, and this says 60 dozen of this product at $6.25 per dozen. That's the product description, in this case 3M post pads. And this is the total of this. This happens to be an invoice. This is the total of this invoice. It's $592.50. They want to make it so compact they even leave out the decimal point. The decimal point is implied. So it's 592.50 is how that is interpreted. So it's incredibly compact.
Did you work out the coding yourself?
No, I did not develop this. Through the fortune of my journey through IT, I landed in this technology, as I'll talk about in a little while. And so I was able to learn it and use it. And now I help companies use it, especially all the small suppliers who are fortunate enough to land a Walmart contract, and they have to use this stuff in order to do business with Walmart. So the software, the tools of the trade that I use, there is the EDI translator. That's the software I work in on a daily basis. And it's exactly that. It's a translator. It has, on the left side is source data. This may be Walmart's electronic purchase order. And on the right side is the target data, which may be the QuickBooks system that my customer has. And in the middle is the rule set. These are all the programming rules to take the data from the source, manipulated in the way that it needs to be manipulated to put it into the target system. This is a closer look at some source data, an EDI document, with each of these segments and elements, which in the check mark means it's used. And this is called the schema. A definition of the fields. For instance, a delivery date, since Y2K is an 8-character or 8-digit date, year, 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 month, month, day, day. And this source, we call these business objects models. These models or schemas define everything down to the closest detail of the data. This is another shot of this. That's the source model, and I've, in the screen, taken out one of the fields. This particular field has a minimum length of 2 characters, maximum of 3, and these are the different values that this element or field can have. Just getting off the tail end of a cold. This particular model happens to be connected to a database. Many of the connections we make are directly to databases. And it, if any of you have done any programming, they embedded in them is SQL code, where you query the database and it connects to the database.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly. There's more than 3, but 3 of the biggest, certainly Microsoft SQL is very big. Oracle database is big or huge. And IBM DB2 is the IBM mainframe language, kind of a legacy system, but still is very much alive and carries on today. And then there are many others. Also, at one point, I think that was probably true, yeah. Especially in the 1980s, even the early 90s, even the 90s, yeah. Yeah, Oracle has come up and Microsoft has really shot up. Yes, and then there's open source ones like MySQL and many others. They're all very similar. But this is the area that I work in. For the professors, learning this stuff is invaluable for a student. And you can learn a lot of this by yourself, too. It's very possible from online and so forth. What I connect to, as we just saw, this software can connect to a database very often, most often. There's DB2. But it can also connect to the XML language, kind of a newer business language that's used, for instance, when you're on the company store website and you say, track my package, and it goes out and talks quickly to UPS and finds out that your package just went through Kansas City and it'll be here in 5 days. That's using XML. HTML is the web language that you see on the Amazon site and so forth. There are good old plain data files, tab delimited, comma delimited, or fixed length field files that many people use and sort of are kind of the basis of Excel spreadsheets and so forth. JSON and XML web services are newer technologies called web services that are mushrooming. That's how Company Store talks to UPS to be able to track your package while you're on the Company Store or Lands' End website. And of course, this software speaks EDI, which is the ANSI ANSI X12 standard, is the US-based EDI standard, and the UN developed the standard used largely in Europe, but also internationally, called EDIFACT, is the European standard. So the software speaks all of these languages. So the other part of my life connected with this is the communications and data automation part. So we work in the management council. There's the software I use is ECS, e-commerce server. It runs on a server. And basically it has channels. It has input channels supporting many different communications protocols, some of them secure, some of them not secure. But it has input channels of how data is pulled in through an FTP, through email, through an HTTP post, which is the basis of a lot of Amazon's business, and so forth. It has output channels that do the output in the same manner or write a file to somewhere on the local disk. And then there are translation jobs. There is jobs such as do the invoice run at 10 p.m. every night and so forth. It's all in here. So this is the main control panel that handles all the communications. This is the data administrator, kind of the dashboard where we see all of the data that's come in and gone out from a server or location or a cloud installation. And it's a little hard to see, but on the left are these little green disk drives, which means this data came in and it was delivered successfully wherever it's going. The delivery was cut off a little bit, but it's right here showing the actual delivery of the software, of how it came in, how it went out. And the last piece I work with is a little utility called EDI Notepad, which basically speaks the EDI dictionary or the EDI Bible that can look at, in this case, these freight invoices from FedEx for a project that I'm working on and show that everything is proper, that a field is not too long or too short or missing and so forth, and what everything means. Sort of our data checker. So, this is what I do, and this is how the main point I want to get across is this is really how business is operating today on all 12 cylinders, and attest to that by the fact that just last night, as I mentioned, I saw the FedEx ad. They're saying we're in e-commerce. They have been for a long time. Now they're advertising it. UPS had a big push 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. They're in e-commerce. Microsoft has Azure. They're in the cloud computing and e-commerce. Walmart has been really pushing it since the 80s. This is really what makes everything run. So, for those of you in the audience who want to get into a computing career or enhance your computing career, so I'm speaking to the professors who will relay this information to the students who need these key points, how do you do it? I guess this is the point that I tell my story. As I said, I studied human genetics. I was really good at gene mapping the relationships between things because we use probability and correlation studies. Then I, on the job as a research biologist, I taught myself programming out of books because computers were coming into the lab. And we got a computer and maybe a little training class and we got a manual. And I took to it sort of like a duck to water. Taught myself, and then when I lost that job, I got a job as a data processing manager for a biological testing lab, where I worked for 7 years and continued my career and so forth. Meanwhile, I had my consulting business on the side, so I worked in the evenings and the weekends. And then when I was at the bio lab for far too long, I left and came home and told my wife we had just bought our house the months before, the year before or something. I said, I'm going to make a go of it. I've got 3 months worth of projects. This was 1986. And she had a heart attack, but the rest is history because it took off. And I was, I've been able to continue my career full time on my own since 1986. Well, I started programming in 1977. I was at the lab as a data processing manager from 1978 to 1986. That's when I went full-time on my own, originally working out of the house until I eventually moved into a small office where I'm still at. And at those times I was programming the basic language on computers that are called Data General Nova computers, Basic 4 computers, those computers that are long history. But that language and that base that I was working in migrated to Unix as those mini computers went away. The PC came out in 1982. So I had my boat. I'm kind of on the fifth iteration of what I've done in my career, but my boat kind of floated towards Unix for a short period. But while I was at the biotech lab, they used telex machines to securely send results to people who made heart valves and blood oxygenators and those kinds of products. They needed rock solid confirmation that their products were sterilized and that they were what's called pyrogen free. If you have an unsterile product and you kind of rub it off and inject it into a rabbit and the rabbit's temperature goes up, it's pyrogenic. If you grind it up or whatever and put it in a rabbit and the rabbit's temperature does not go up, it's not pyrogenic. And then, of course, you have to confirm that it's sterile also. That's what they did. So, and those results had to be rock solid because you've got heart valve manufacturers like Shiley and Edwards Life Sciences and so forth counting on this. So those results at that time were sent by a telex machine. Maybe some of you have seen them, the big metal things that look like a huge typewriter that are fed. You prepare your message on a punch tape, put the punch tape in, and it sends it at, I think, 30 characters per second, something like that. They use telex. And so just about that time, Western Union was allowing computers to be hooked to the telex network. And so the lab charged me with the job of hooking their computers to the telex network. And I programmed this, and I did this. I created a software package. I sold maybe 25 copies, which I'm very proud of, to companies that needed to do this. And that's how these messages were. And so in the process of all of this, I built a relationship with Western Union. They gave me a dealership to sell this service to other companies that needed it. And so I started heading down the path of communications. And then, I don't know, in the early 80s, Western Union, or at least that division of it, was bought out by AT&T, which carried my dealership over, and I got to sell more products, basically more communications. We sold telex. We sold fax services where you had to pay for it to get it through. We sold email because in the original days of email, you didn't send a message and it was free. You sent a message and it cost something. It cost a nickel or a dime or something to send an email message through AT&T to get it through the internet to wherever it was going. So I was out there selling these products and learning communications, and then in the late 1980s, the AT&T stuff started to expand to include EDI, and I got my first project of today everything going to Walmart is through the internet. In the early 80s, Walmart used IBM modems called bisynchronous modems. And I started getting jobs programming these modems to bisynchronously send EDI messages through the modems that go through a telephone network to Walmart that had these big banks of modems that received the messages and so forth, until later on they converted everything over to the internet. My customer that I'm working with right now, my tire manufacturer, the third largest tire manufacturer in Korea, their trading partner is VW, and we have to interact with VW, which is proving to be very difficult because VW uses kind of an arcane European standard, and I've got to push a lot of different things to make that happen. I've recently worked with General Motors, but in the earlier days, most of my work has been retail. Companies selling to Walmart, Target, CVS, Rite Aid, some to Sears, and Nordstrom's, and all the Macy's chains, Bon-Ton, one that starts with an S from the Middle West that I think doesn't exist anymore, and Marshall Fields and so forth is where most of my work done. LA has a lot of clothing manufacturers, a lot of Korean clothing manufacturers here in Los Angeles that are selling to all these guys. I've got my three lovely ladies, Hapa girls in Hawaii, who make lays and travel accoutrements that they're selling to Walmart. You know, a guy in Connecticut selling shampoo to Walmart and so forth. Yes. Well, if the data is going through a value-added network, if the data securely goes to the value-added network that securely carries it to its destination, but most uses a protocol called AS2, which is basically a protocol to encrypt the data with a security certificate that my customers have, that's part of the software I work with. They generate a security certificate. The data is encrypted, goes through the internet to Walmart or Sears or whoever, who has the key that is necessary, the security certificate key that is necessary to unencrypt the data. And I'm not an expert in the field, but I'm getting more and more exposed to it on a daily and weekly basis of what the different types of certificates are, what the different types of encryptions are, and I use that together with the software that actually does it. I think rather quick, because this, yeah, sure. Right, okay.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay.
You must be dealing with $1 trillion businesses. We deal with multi-million-dollar businesses. I have never seen anything like this. It's all done with English language all around the world, the best English they got.
Okay, okay.
We do quotes. Uh-huh. We do process invoices, orders, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, so what industry are you in, or is your brother?
Industrial equipment. Pumps, motors, compressors, hoses.
Okay.
Okay,
okay.
And I don't even know what you're talking about. I've never seen anything
We haven't done it. Well, actually, many of my customers produce, or some of my customers produce those kinds of projects. I worked on a project for Hydeck, a big manufacturer of hydraulic equipment going into Caterpillar. It depends largely upon who your customers are.
Usually, they need 2-3 pieces in the next few weeks. And another thing I was going to say is we always ask them because we just want to clear the order out.
Yeah.
We want it by December 1st. Yeah. Okay, we ship tomorrow. Yes, no.
Yeah.
Email with these little fingers. Yes, no.
Okay.
And like I said, we don't use any secrets.
Well, you're doing it manually.
It's all done by email.
Mm-hmm. It may be because if your customers were General Motors and so forth,
it's still done in English.
You would have to do this. Now they have there is a lot of business that is done your way.
100%.
Yeah, and also if you're supplying to a mid-tier or mid-middle market company that takes your hydraulic products and then puts it into a frame.
Anything from General Motors to whoever, not Walmart. Not retail. No, they're wholesale companies who work, for example, in Houston.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff to the oil field.
Right, yeah.
For the machine.
Yeah.
And never, it's just a standard thing.
Yeah.
Send out a form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By this date, it's all fairly standard.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of a thing, but nothing like this.
A lot of business is done that way today. Today.
It
depends upon the industry, who the customer is, and also the size of the supplier. If you're supplying 3 units a week or whatever. Yeah. Right, of course, yeah.
You're talking $500 for a little box.
Exactly, yes. Yes. So a lot of business is done that way, and also if the orders are small and so forth. Okay. So how do you turn this into a big career? It's a lot of work. But also a lot of joy. So what's the formula for your students especially? First of all, figure out what size company you work best in. I work best in medium-sized companies and small companies. I can work in a large company. I've worked at Amgen and so forth, but being in a cubicle with 5,000 other people in the building around me isn't my style. So you have to find out or figure out where you fit in best. Do you work best in small teams? Do you work best in really small companies? Or do you thrive in large institutions? So that's really important. And that will then dictate what sort of company is your target. If it's large, maybe a Walmart or Macy's, Ralph's, General Motors, Amazon, etc. If it's large, high-tech, it's Amazon. If it's small, there's 80% of the businesses in the country are small, and there's a ton of medium businesses, really from 40 employees up to 500, or plus or minus. There's a ton of those. The second step is you figure out or find out what ERP accounting software that company is using. If it's a large company, they very likely would be using SAP. They very possibly could be using Oracle Enterprise. If they're a large high-tech company, they're using Amazon Web Services. If they're a medium company, they're using either Microsoft Dynamics, the AX package, the NAV Navision package. Or they may be using Oracle J.D. Edwards. A lot of medium-sized companies use that. Square, the credit card reader people, they're using Oracle Enterprise. Small businesses use QuickBooks. A little bit larger small businesses are using Microsoft Great Plains. So you find out what ERP package they're using. If you really want to get going in an IT career, everyone's using Microsoft SQL. The people who can write, understand it, and can write good queries and can whip up that special report when the manager needs it or whatever, you've got a good job here and continuing work. And also, in Y2K 2000, like, everything was reworked. The hood was open, everything was totally torn apart and put back together. We're 16 years out from that. A lot of that stuff that was written in 2000 Y2K is beginning to break, fraying on the edges, been bent and molded over the years, and needs a lot of attention. So there's a lot of work there. We hear about big data. That's how when, you know, I was searching for pajamas on Amazon or something, and my wife scolded me because she was at work, and all of a sudden she's getting pajama ads on her website, and wondering why men's pajamas are there. It's because Amazon and everyone else is using big data to figure out who you are, what your interest is, and what products you may be interested in buying. If you can learn big data, you can build yourself a career. Web services called JSON, Java, and XML are also big. That's how the Lands End or Company Store website talks to FedEx to know where your package is right there on the screen. Cloud computing, the Microsoft Azure, Oracle is making a big push in it now. Salesforce.com, NetSuite, Microsoft Azure, Amazon AWS, Amazon Web Services, are all doing, this is really where the big push is. If you learn this stuff, you've got a career. And for those of you in the audience, many of you will know this, that the cloud computing whiz-bang of today is really a repackaging of the 1970s service bureau that maybe the companies you work for paid thousands of dollars a month be able to use the service bureau to do their inventory or whatever they needed to do on a big mainframe computer that, of course, you couldn't have in-house. That's really all it is, because the cloud computing is not in the cloud. It's in data centers around the world. So what do all of these have in common? And I told you how I got my career. The main point I wanted to get across for the students, a student approaching, should I learn C++ language or C#, or should I do database work, or should I learn this, or Java, or whatever, whatever, whatever. There's a lot of options, HTML coding and so forth. There's a ton of options there, but to shortcut to a good long-time job, you want to glom onto these ERP packages, because these are what make businesses run, and they are mission-critical. And if they break, and when they break, and they do break, or things go wrong, business grinds to a halt. So it's really mission-critical, and if you become a critical player in keeping that software running, that's where you can guarantee a job for for a long time. I'm not a playwright, but that's where you come in. And I know, you know, if I just look at, you know, my customers, and one of my customers supplies tile and building products. They have 50 or so distribution centers and showrooms around the country, several hundred employees. They know their business. They're very good at what they do. They source their product from China and Italy and so forth. All of that stuff runs and works, and they've got their loyal following of hundreds of contractors and Home Depot and showrooms and stuff. But it's their ERP software and its connection to EDI that's really critical, because the programming that I do in many cases may handle 85% of the business of a particular company, which is huge. Anthropology at UCLA in the early 70s, and maybe still today, was very much biological anthropology, and they had their big archaeology section also. Human genetics was part of that. So that's what got me into, and I really took a liking and an interest in human genetics and figuring out how things worked. I'm a very logical thinker, and it drives my wife crazy, but we can meet some people for the first time, and maybe the couple we're meeting, the husband is an architecture student or has an interest in architecture, and I say, hey, our friend Ralph is an architect. Why don't you talk to him? And I have this professor at UCLA that might be good for you. Why don't you talk to him? I'm very good at connecting people and things together. It's just my constitution. You know, a person who's a...
Have you followed this?
I follow genetics just a little bit, and not really very much. So I'm very good at connecting things. I taught myself programming and really enjoy it. I can speak programming languages. I can speak a little bit of Spanish, but otherwise I'm horrible at foreign languages. Speak a little bit of Japanese because I did some studying in Japan. but that's it. You know, a person who's a virtuoso violinist, they really have it and they go with it. My calling, if you will, is in programming. And the other piece that I'll get to is I understand programming and do very well at it, but I speak business, very important for the students. I speak to more general managers and company presidents and department managers and customer service people than I do IT people. And when I'm speaking to those people, if I'm speaking IT, they can't understand me. I have to speak business. And so I understand business. In large part, my uncle was an engraver, kind of the founding member of our family for many years, had his engraving business that all the nephews worked at downtown. And the building is still there. No. My great uncle, who was also an engraver, my family migrated from Odessa, from Russia, the Ukraine. My mother and her siblings came through Japan to get to San Francisco to go to Milwaukee, where our family grew up, because it was World War I and the Atlantic was too dangerous. But my great uncle came a few years earlier with his, I don't know when he got married exactly, but probably with his wife. They went through China. They lived in Shanghai in the Jewish community for 2 years or so. To make money, he was an engraver for the Chinese government, engraving monetary plates. So they did that. My uncle My uncle's main business was making steel stamps and marking devices for aviation and the Apollo project, all the Apollo and Gemini and Mercury projects, and the aerospace industry where my father worked. He worked for Hughes Aircraft, but my uncle did the engraving that all of this aviation industry, Douglas, Hughes, so on and so forth, that were all here in Los Angeles and Southern California, that unfortunately have left, or largely left. That's what they did. And so I learned a lot of business from my uncle, because all the nephews worked there on Saturday. My dad worked there on Saturdays. I worked there on Saturdays. My cousins either worked there, full time or Saturdays and stuff. So that's kind of where we got our business. So I speak business and technology, and that combination is what really wins. So if you become a critical player to keep the ERP package going, the software going, and the business running, you're in like Flint. So what does it take to do this? You have to do really, really good work. You have to be a really good programmer and do really reliable programming is very important. I'm not out here saying anybody can do this. Not anybody can do this. Not everybody can do this. But the kids, the middle school kids today who, go online and in 2 weeks teach themselves SQL query language programming or Java or web services or HTML encoding and so forth, that then, go on to build up their career, and a lot of this can be done with online courses, and they have to get a job, so you have to work with, headhunter agencies or job agencies or monster.com or whatever, of course, or get a, ground floor job and work your way up. I did it, and it's very doable. So you have to do really good work. Your programming has to be rock solid. Maybe 85% of the business flows through your programming, so better be good. You need to speak business in addition to technology. A lot of programmers just speak technology, and, they're very good, and they get along and so forth. But the people who can speak both are the ones that really get themselves into a good place, because it's the business owners running the business and worried about keeping their employees active and moving and keeping the products, the source material coming in the front door and the products going out the door on time, delivered on time, keeping the customers happy, fitting into that supply chain stream is where you can really do something. And you need to be a good problem solver. Customer service is always saying these orders are getting messed up, this is getting messed up, what do we do, what do we do? You have to solve it. Yes, yeah. And Amazon now has it. I can't remember if it's same day delivery or just the next day. Next day, yeah, you can order. If you order $35 or more product, they ship it for free. You order it by, 10 p.m. or something. Their big distribution center is in North Las Vegas. They have another large facility just over the Grapevine. When you get down into the San Joaquin Valley, there's that big warehouse complex. I don't know if Amazon is right there, but... Yeah, it's enormous, yeah. Amazon themselves may not be quite there, but... Their main facility is in North Las Vegas, so a 5-hour drive, 6-hour drive. They've got it down to a T, and as long as the truck leaves by 10 a.m. or whatever, the driver may come to your house at 9 p.m., as has happened to me. But you...
Yeah. By the way, they're not
working. That's how all this stuff does. And they're smart. They're a huge warehouse in North Las Vegas, has everything, but they're forward storing inventory in local areas to be able to get it faster and faster.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Multi-million square foot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, exactly, yes. That's right. That's right. And not only does he have Amazon retailing going, but their data centers are the core of the Amazon Web Services, which is a huge part of their business. As huge as retail is, the web services is huge. And then, you know, then he's got his rocket stuff and all the other stuff too. So it's amazing. They're seen as software engineers. But the key is IT is so broad. Some people are really good in HTML. Some people are really good in coding. You know, other people are good at these middle points. And so, You have to specialize. I certainly don't know everything, and I don't do basic coding. I call it e-business. My specialty is B2B. I coined the phrase e-business. So some other people are using that term also. No, I don't do web design. I know a little bit on how to do it, but just the basics. I do some adjusting on my own website, which somebody else built. But sometimes e-commerce documents have to be emailed in a human readable form, like that Walmart purchase order we saw back a ways. That coding I do. But I don't do websites, no. My nephew does. My nephew's career is in web design. So you have to be a problem solver. So businesses are complex. Management has a hard enough time keeping things running smoothly. If you get yourself a career in an area that supports the business running smoothly, and management likes you, you can be there for 40 years, 39 years, like I've been. In my case, I'm independent and used by companies. But other programmers that I know have been at companies for many years, and they keep things going, and the management keeps them there. Management doesn't always understand technology. They respect and reward those who keep things going smoothly. And so, you know, you too, your students can build a 40-year career. So how do you do it? Not everyone can. The reason that I accepted this invitation to talk was I wanted to really relay what I see very clearly, and I don't think a lot of people see it this way, that if you learn these ERP packages and you marry yourself to a Larry Ellison or an Oracle or an SAP or an IBM or AWS Amazon Services, you're riding on the piggybacks of those companies that are investing billions of dollars in their technology to sell it, Microsoft Azure and so forth. You know, they're the ones that are doing the heavy lifting. You're just kind of riding along, you know, on the coattails. But if you ride along on the coattails of these packages, you don't have to quite reinvent the wheel so much, and you put yourself in a good position where a company really needs you. You know, good programmers are sort of a dime a dozen, but if you have the talents in these ERP packages, you become more valuable. For the company. So, I'll send you this. Well, you have the PowerPoint, and I can send it to you as a PDF as well. So somebody embarking on this needs to look, they need to figure out what size company or what size industry they want to work for. Then
learn everything they can about the key technology, and any one of these, and there's more, but any one of these, to learn that. And so these are just some resources. And anybody, if you pick up one of my business cards and send me an email if you want the presentation, I'll be happy to send it to you. Any one of these, some of these are free, some are now charging some, but it's still pretty inexpensive. Lynda.com, you can learn about anything, SQL or Java or whatever. Coursera teaches Ivy League courses out of Stanford and the Northeast Ivy Leagues and all the rest, where the list is humongous. I took and got interested in a big data course. But Coursera, you get anything like artificial intelligence, robotics, you name it, they've got it. And they may be free unless you want to get accredited for it. So that exists. UCLA has the coding boot camp for web developers. I don't know what they said, 6 weeks or something. They just take you through everything you need to know. Codecademy.com has coding on all sorts of things. How to Geek. Oracle TechWorks tutorials teaches you and has sections in there for all the different Oracle packages. Then there's UDEMY, has pieces on Oracle DBA. For J.D. Edwards, a very good medium-sized business package. There's JDE101.org and JDE Tips and many others. All you have to do is Google how to learn J.D. Edwards, SAP, Microsoft Azure, SQL, you know, Microsoft SQL, SQL Server. There's a ton out there. There's a ton that's for free or very inexpensive. And that's not even talking about Santa Monica College and the local community colleges and so forth. And then also on the job, there's nothing wrong with getting your foot in the door with a ground level job and just work your way up. So this is my contact information. There's business cards on the table. I have for the UCLA community and the community as a whole, I have an open door policy. I take phone calls, I take emails if you have questions or something. If someone is looking for a job or looking for suggestions on how to go about looking for a job, I'm happy to share with them to give back to the community some of what I'm so grateful to have. And this is where I open it up for questions, which we've answered and so forth. Thank you.